Anyway!
It's bad bitch o'clock, yeah. And it's Thick 30. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. So excited to be here at the Democratic National Convention live doing Civic Media's special coverage from the United Center. Joined by another very special guest, y'all. It's Morris Pearl. He is chairman of the Patriotic Millionaires. Used to work for BlackRock, has a whole pile of money, doesn't have to work anymore. He's one of those people. And guess what Morris thinks? He thinks rich people like himself and the country's wealthiest and most profitable corporations should be taxed more. Welcome back to the show, Morris. Happy to have you.
Hey, great to be in your show, Maggie. Thank you.
Wonderful. I'm not quite hearing Morris yet. Let's try that again. Welcome back, Morris. Good to have you. Try it one more time.
Thanks for having me. Great to be in your show.
We got you now, Morris. Loud and clear. Let's start with the basics. Why should rich people and the most profitable corporations be taxed more?
Well, look, it's just not fair that people like me, who don't even work for a living, pay tax rates at a fraction of the rate that you do on your income as a working journalist. And, like, I don't even work. I make lots of money from my investments, and I pay almost no taxes at all.
Now, tell folks what that differential is, right? When you say your income or what you earn on investments isn't taxed the way work is taxed, what do you mean by that?
Well, honestly, some people can earn a lot of money on their investments and pay zero taxes completely. I was just talking to Senator Ron Wyden on the way here. He's the chairman of the Senate Finance Committee. He's concerned about this buy, borrow, die system that you can buy stock, borrow money against the stock, make and live on that money, spend it, and yet have zero taxable income. Because taxable income is only defined from money from your labor, which mm-hmm. is how most people like you get money to live on,
yep.
or money when you actually sell something. But I can withdraw money from my brokerage account. And I did this. I actually did, just to make sure I'm telling the truth. So I withdrew hundreds of thousands of dollars from my brokerage account and had zero taxable income. And I spent all that money and had to pay no taxes at all on it because it's not considered income because I didn't sell any stock. Someday I might sell the stock or I might not. This can go on until I die. And then the brokerage firm will sell some of the stock. And no one will ever pay any taxes because of other rules called step-up basis.
Yeah.
So I can live very well and not pay any tax at all. And if I do choose to sell my stock, which I actually do sometimes, I have tax rates of zero. Working people do not have tax rates of zero.
Yeah.
Or 15% or 20%. So the actual tax rate of an investor, even who sells all of their investments, is below 20%. Which is less than most people who actually work for a living pay on their income. So it's just not fair. And that's part of the reason why people like me are getting richer and richer and richer, and so many other people are just struggling to get by and frankly not able to save money and just kind of living paycheck to paycheck. And that's why some people are getting richer and richer and other people are not.
When did the wheels start to come off the bus from a fairness perspective? Because our tax code wasn't always this way, or the discrepancy, the difference wasn't always this extreme, was it?
Well, I think it started really in the 1980s under the Reagan administration. They somehow decided that, oh, we're afraid that rich people are going to go on strike or something.
Right, and, which is so ridiculous. I won't invest anymore.
No. We have to lower their taxes. And thinking about it, A, that's completely ridiculous.
Right.
Rich people, you can't go on strike from being rich.
Yeah.
And B, even if I wanted to, if I have a bunch of money, that money's either in a checking account or invest in the stock market, or I could invest in
real estate,
yes.
Fine arts and collectibles, yes.
But whatever I invest in, it's invested in something. even if it's cash in the bank, then the bank can lend it out. So the money doesn't stop existing. So even if I wanted to go on strike from being rich, the money doesn't disappear. It goes somewhere.
Yes, it keeps working for you.
It keeps working for me
capacity.
Or for someone.
Yes.
So it's just a ridiculous idea that, oh, we have to give a special lower taxes to rich people or they'll, I don't know, be mean to us or something.
Where did this sort of antithetical concept come from? It seems to me that most conservatives would vigorously defend the idea of baseline microeconomics, that individuals are profit-maximizing, profit-seeking individuals. And so it seems when you make this argument that all of a sudden rich people won't want to accumulate more wealth is a little bit stupid and runs contrary to the fundamental assumptions that they make about a capitalistic system.
Maybe it's just some self-serving idea that they want to somehow convince people that they're entitled to lower tax rates for some reason.
Ah, Morris, it seems that we might have fallen upon a little kernel of truth here, that it in fact is a bunch of frickin' hooey designed to trick middle class and working Americans into supporting something that is economically so disadvantageous for middle class and working Americans. Might that be it, potentially?
You know, I honestly think so. I mean, some rich guys can come in and say, created this company and employ all these people and create all these jobs and did all these things, and therefore I'm rich and somehow deserving of being even richer. But like, if they had to pay regular taxes, well, they'd still create a company and employ people and stuff. You only pay taxes on the profits of the company.
Yes.
If you employ more people or pay those people more, that actually lowers your taxes. It doesn't raise your taxes.
Right.
There's already a tax incentive for spending money because all of the money you spend in your business
reduces
is tax deductible.
Yes. And instead, we've created this perverse system where it seems, especially America's most profitable corporations, seem to be more inclined to engage in stock buybacks and dividend disbursements, which, again, if the person doesn't cash out the investment, you know, they're escaping tax. Again, the incentive structure here seems to be off when it comes to reinvesting in actual businesses that help job growth or increasing wages to help support middle class families.
Well, I mean, the incentive on a business is not to job growth or
right
something.
Profitability.
The incentive of business is the owners making more money. And sometimes the owners realize they can make more money by investing and hiring more people and expanding their business. You know, I had dinner last night at pizzeria.
Yes.
It went from one store in 1971 to a guy with 68 stores now.
Yes.
And that's great.
Yes.
And he's making lots of money, hopefully.
Yes.
You know, and that's what he decided to do. And I think he and his children, his grandchildren, are a lot richer now than they would be
had he just kept the one store.
Kept the one store.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. I often hear from people that, oh, well, if you tax corporations more, they're going to flee the United States and re-residence themselves in tax havens. Tell me what the rebuttal to that is.
Well, first of all, if you're running a business, you need to make money by selling stuff to people.
Yes.
You need to sell stuff to people who have money. You know, there's a lot more money to be made selling coffee in the United States than there is selling coffee in China, which Starbucks has found out to its detriment.
Yes.
And anyone starting a business, they don't look for a low-wage place to start their business. I want to save money by not paying people too much. They look for a high-wage place to start their business. Oh, I want to sell stuff to people who can pay me lots of money. Our members of our Patriotic Millionaires group, they are wealthy because they build businesses to sell very expensive shoes to women who have a lot of money, sell very expensive ice cream, and things like that.
Yeah.
They didn't make money by somehow doing something to make a lot of money from poor people.
Yes.
That doesn't work. The poor people don't have much money.
Yes, it's interesting. as larger and larger, if not the entirety of middle-class family paychecks, are going to buy the basics these days. Again, it seems to me to be a bit counterintuitive or at least limited in its analysis to say, we got to tax corporations less. That's the only way to grow the economy. We need a middle class to buy the goods that the businesses are making. There is a relationship. There is a symbiotic relationship between businesses and the consumers of the goods that businesses make.
Let me tell you, Maggie.
Yeah.
If you want to have a policy to help some people,
yes,
you could send those people who you want to help more money.
Yes.
Sending other people more money and thinking it's going to somehow trickle down to the people that need the help.
Yeah, it's not going to work, Maurice.
It doesn't work very well.
Hmm, interesting.
Money does not trickle down. Money trickles up, actually.
Yes.
Every time you pay your cell phone bill or your rent payment or your mortgage payment, some of that money trickles up to people like me that own stock in Apple and the banks.
Verizon.
Yes. That's how I get rich, is owning stock in companies like Apple and Verizon and banks that make a little bit of money every time someone pays their iTunes bill or their cell phone bill or their mortgage payment and their rent payment, things like that. Money does not trickle down. That's false.
Yeah, that's false. I'm going to ask one of our longtime listeners and callers, hey, CJ, what do you think about taxing billionaires and corporations more? Is that a good idea?
Yeah, say goodbye to them again. They were coming back. And the Trump policy, I bet you Civic Media used the Trump policies to expand. Because I believe you're a corporation. You work for a corporation, don't you?
Yes, most of us do, CJ. What's the point?
Patriotic Millionaires is a corporation, too. Two corporations, in fact.
Again, the point is, they're going to leave the country because your candidate has these brilliant ideas. What is it? Gouging policies, I guess? No. Oh, gouging. Yeah, I guess it's gouging.
Yes, which is illegal both under federal and state law, CJ.
Pronounce it right. Pardon me?
I said price gouging has been illegal under both federal and state law for quite some time. Is your argument that businesses will leave if they're paying a higher tax rate? We've got to leave it there, CJ, but I'm not going to leave it there with Maurice yet. He's going to come back after the break. We're going to talk more about that fundamental fallacy that all of a sudden businesses will pack up and leave if they're taxed more. Somehow they were all around when the corporate tax rates were higher. Before 2017. Weird, huh?
Yeah.
Listen, we're going to take care of some business ourselves. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to Civic Media, live coverage from the DNC.
I'm going to do my song now.
Okay, yay!
The summer of brat, y'all, and I'm so happy to be here with Kamala Harris, Tim Walz, and the entire DNC and the Wisconsin delegation. I got a really special guest for everyone this half hour, my friend and yours, Maurice Pearl, a rich guy that knows that corporations and rich people should be taxed more, not less. Now, I've heard this argument from conservatives before. We talked about it a little bit. It seems to hinge on this idea that if you tax rich people, and CJ only really talked about corporations, but if you tax rich people and corporations more, like somehow they're going to leave in droves and it's going to collapse the economy. Cool. I don't buy it. To me, I see that, first of all, those tax rates were at 35% for decades before Donald Trump slashed them to 21% in 2017. And somehow we still had lots of corporations making billions and billions of dollars. It's weird.
Yeah, I'm thinking, you know, there is that one guy who wants to go to Mars.
But yes.
That'd be okay with me.
Yes. Elon, goodbye.
But one of the things we are looking at, think of, for instance, Ken Langone.
Yes.
One of the founders of Home Depot. Very successful corporation. He founded that corporation and worked really hard to earn his money, and deserves to be a billionaire.
Mm-hmm.
His tax rate was over 70%. He chose to live in New York City. His office was a few blocks from mine, overlooking Bryant Park. He didn't move to some other state or other country with lower taxes because he knew that that's where he wanted to live. Now, he's a rich billionaire. He donated a lot of money to NYU. They named a hospital after him, the Langone Pavilion.
Mm-hmm.
And now he says, oh, tax rates are so high that we need to lower them or else. And, like, it's just not true. America did great things when tax rates were 70%.
Mm-hmm.
America did great things when tax rates were 90%. People used to think it was patriotic to pay higher taxes. There were music videos about that during the Second World War.
Yes.
The idea that people are, like, somehow going to go on strike or move to Mars or Somalia or someplace with lower taxes is just, it's not true. It doesn't happen.
Yeah.
I live in New York City. We have higher taxes in New York than in most other states. Okay?
Yeah.
More people are moving into New York than moving out of New York.
Yes.
We have more millionaires in New York now than we did last year.
Yes.
New York is a very successful place. Part of the reason is because we have so many rich people there.
Yeah, right. One of the things that I like to challenge folks like CJ that I hear from time to time is this. Hey, what if you're wrong? What if that assumption that you've made is a political punchline and doesn't reflect actual reality? How have you verified those sorts of assumptions? And routinely, there's not a really good answer because you can actually look into these things. What the Trump tax cut did is it didn't save any major corporations from leaving. What it did is let the 300 wealthiest, most consistently profitable, largest corporations in America keep just shy of about $1 trillion in tax revenues. And what this entire scheme truly is about, ultimately, is gutting things like Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid in the end. Isn't that the long game here?
And some people think that is a good idea.
Yeah, I wonder if CJ is cashing his Social Security checks. What do you think? I think he probably is.
Well, I'm not going to cast aspersions on CJ.
Yes, that's fair.
And if he is, he's perfectly entitled to.
Correct. He earned those benefits.
But I think that everyone does better in a country where everyone does better.
Yes.
I do not want to live in a country with lots of poor people who don't have, you know, Medicare or Social Security and things like that. That is my preference. I could find a banana republic to live in.
Yes.
You know, I went to visit Peru recently. There are rich people there that live in compounds behind high walls with barbed wire fences and get driven around by armored cars with bodyguards and cars behind and in front. I could move there. I don't want to.
Yes.
I don't want to live like that.
Yes.
I want to live on Park Avenue in Manhattan, which is where I live.
Mm-hmm.
And I would rather pay higher taxes and live in New York with all of the things that has to offer. And so would millions of other people.
Yes. I think fundamentally there's this idea that we have to permit the rich to effectively plunder the middle class in order to save the middle class, when that's just not true. Like, that doesn't even square. I liked the way you put it, Morris. Hey, if we want one group of people to do better, we should give enormous billions of dollars to some other group of people and hope that magically it somehow helps group of people A. Like, that common sense flies in the face of all of that.
Yeah, if you want to help, for instance, you know, young couples who are having trouble affording their housing, buy houses, send money to young couples who are having trouble affording their housing.
Right.
And some of them will buy houses.
Yes.
You know, you don't need to give tax breaks to rich real estate developers.
Yeah, it seems absolutely silly. And yet this fundamental presumption has seemed to guide conservative tax policy for upwards of 50 years. And I hear it from well-meaning people, well-meaning folks who have seemed to bought into this line of questioning. I hear similar arguments about the minimum wage. Oh, well, if we raise the minimum wage, businesses will go out of business. So, well, maybe it's not a good economic model of a business if you can't pay people a living wage.
Look, talk to the guy who owns the beer concession behind you here in the United Center. Ask him if he's more concerned about how much beer money the Bulls fans have or how much the wages of the one guy standing there pouring the beer are.
Yeah. He wants more people with more beer money.
Exactly. How much money that bartender makes is the least of his worries, I assure you.
Yes.
And hopefully the bartender gets enough tips that he's not he's doing okay.
Well, we could get into the whole tipping economy myself. I'll just say this, and maybe I'll come back to this after these next brief messages. I want to talk about this idea of tax, no tax on tips, because I think it's the wrong approach. If we're going to be concerned about what people in food and bev make in tips, and they deserve a tax holiday, so does everybody who's making $15 an hour. That's a system-wide problem, not just about service workers. Am I right?
I feel that there should be a tax exemption from income taxes up to a living wage.
Yes.
Which is actually more than $15 an hour. Yeah. I believe every part of this United States now.
It would be, clearly. Yes. Thanks so much, Morris.
You're welcome, Maggie.
I can't wait to do this every Monday. Well, maybe you'll pop by before the DNC is over. It's a real pleasure, friend.
Yep.
Folks, that's Morris Pearl, chairman of the Patriotic Millionaires, talking about why rich folks should pay more in taxes. It's that simple. Rich folks should pay more in taxes. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to Civic Media's special live coverage from the DNC in Chicago from the United Center. We'll be back. We might even have another special guest popping by, folks. Stay put, everybody. We'll be back in just a moment. Yeah, 360. When you're in the mirror, do you love what you see? When you're in the mirror, you're just looking at me. I'm everywhere, I'm so Julia. When you're in the party, bumping that beat. 666 with a princess treat. I'm everywhere, I'm so Julia. What is up, Wisconsin, and welcome back. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network, coming to you live from downtown Chicago's United Center, here for the Democratic National Convention. I want to take a moment, because I can actually take a breath right now, because I'm looking at three gentlemen who help make this possible every day. So I want to say thank you, Corey Hartman. Thank you, Chris Casper. And thank you, Brian Kelly, for doing all of this incredible work so that we can be here live and talk to everybody across the state. There's Brian Kelly. That's fancy,
hey, that's
Brian.
Me. How you doing?
I get to look at that handsome face every day in the booth. Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Corey. Thank you, Brian. And certainly last but not least, Catherine Lake, also helping here wrangle every single one of us, our program director and station manager from WMDX in Madison. So many people work to make this happen. It's such a privilege to be here with each and every one of you. I really, really appreciate it.
I got to tell you, I've been looking around and I've been going around a lot of booths.
Yes.
This is one of the more dynamic booths with what we have compared to everyone else. We don't have we don't have studio, like super studio sound equipment. We have really good stuff here, and what we have and what we've done with it, the ability to put, I mean, just the design of this whole thing, having different camera angles and the way to go through this is just absolutely amazing. The setup I'm working on is super easy. Calvin's got a super easy setup back in WAUK. Hi, Calvin. How you doing?
Hey, Calvin.
You're doing a great job, by the way. And it's just fantastic. I love that Corey's also awake. It's important. He was not awake a minute ago. Not because he was bored or anything, but he's
up early, works late.
He woke up about 6 a.m. February.
Yeah, and
I don't think he's gone to bed since. So we're going to try and get him to sleep at least one night this week. That's my goal.
At least once, that's for sure. Since we're taking a little bit of a moment, Calvin, I wanted to take maybe some of that Daily Show sound just for a bit of lighthearted humor. So we've heard so very, very much about the scary Project 2025 and the doom that that may portend for the middle class, for freedoms, for the integrity and objectivity of those who work so hard in public service, for science, all of these things that we want government to do accurately, professionally, objectively. I don't think anybody in America wants a bunch of loyalists working throughout federal government. That's just stupid. We want people that work hard for taxpayers, do their jobs with honor and integrity, and get the answers right.
Yeah, literally every single group of people tell you to go and have a diverse group of thought.
Yes.
Basically, it goes back to Lincoln, you know.
Yes, team of rivals.
Team of rivals. It's pretty much the best way to
good
go and build
professionals,
a corporation.
Yep. Experts in their fields. We want the best and brightest.
You ever need
not
some help and ask
a
yes
lackeys.
Man?
Yeah.
You ever ask a yes man for help?
Yeah.
You're doing a great job figuring out the answer. Yes. Hey, yes.
And, of course, Project 2025 is just weird. The Daily Show found some footage of a training video for Project 2025, and it is...
They have training videos?
They have training videos.
It doesn't exist. It's not real. It's not us, but we do have training videos.
But we have training videos. Guess what the training videos are, Brian?
Hi, my name is blah, blah, blah.
They're
and you
weird.
Might be you. We are coming to
they're very
you.
Weird. Yes, they're very weird. The Daily Show clipped some of it. I thought now would be a good time to catch our breath and have a moment of levity. Let's take a listen, Calvin, if you can roll that Daily Show content here. This is Desi Leidig.
These are internal training videos for people who want to join a new Trump government in the hopes of someday being kicked off Dancing with the Stars. But they won't just hire anyone.
If you've been convicted of a crime, you will not be serving in the federal government. Crimes such as fraud, embezzlement, and tax evasion show a lack of moral character.
Yeah, we'd hate to have fraudsters and tax evaders work for the Trump administration. Go on.
To obtain employment in government, it is not favorable if you have accumulated debt and file for bankruptcy.
You might want to run this up the chain to the boss because it's starting to feel personal. But hiring standards aside, these videos also delve into Project 2025's agenda and policies. And for a party that's recently been fighting back against allegations that they're weird, this won't help.
Hi, I'm Katie Sullivan, and just a normal American woman.
Are you sure? Because now that you said it,
she
I'm wondering.
She doesn't look normal.
Hi, I'm just a normal American woman wearing normal woman skin as we normal women do. Okay, you were being normal?
And just a normal American woman. But to the left, that makes me a cisgendered ethno-imperialist birthing person with pronouns she, her.
Oh my God. Is every sentence going to be like this?
It's weird.
They really get caught up on those pronouns. It's really like they are really upset about that. Someone called in a bomb threat to Kiel, shut down schools because pronouns. Because pronouns.
Pronouns. So this from the party of the following people. Corey Lewandowski, Steve Bannon, felon, Paul Manafort, felon, Roger Stone, basically a felon.
Pardon felon, though.
Pardon felon. Bernie Kerik, bigots like Darren Beatty, Stephen Miller, Marjorie Taylor Greene. Then we got grifters like the MyPillow guy, right, Diamond and Silk, Jenna Ellis, Dinesh D'Souza. Jason Miller, Jerry Falwell Jr. got kicked out of his own church because he was having threesomes. Matt Gaetz, the I'm sure this payment is for your college books Matt Gaetz.
Always good when you write it down. It's the best.
Yeah, Sidney Powell released the Kraken. Mike Flynn, foreign agent, unregistered foreign agent, Mike Flynn, and Rudy Giuliani. Listen, if you have ever filed bankruptcy or have been convicted of fraud, embezzlement, or any other sort of money crimes, you needn't sign up for the federal It's like the entirety of the party. That's how you become the leadership of the party.
By the way, if it's all the same on both sides, it's always the same on both sides. Both sides do the same both thing. Sides. Where are city people? There has to be somewhere, like, some seedy folks around here that do some really shady stuff, like try and help people keep Social Security and
healthcare.
I want to see this. I want to see the seedy underbelly of the DNC.
I mean, at their most benign, and I can't even really use that word in good conscience. They just use movie references to help explain complex policy. I mean, you've got...
I do that all the time.
Right. Donald Trump with the Hannibal Lecter references.
Yeah, that's
right?
Important. Right? You got to bring up Hannibal Lecter.
And then you've got J.D. Vance at the Milwaukee Police Association referencing Gangs of New York and talking about ethnic enclaves and assimilation. Do they actually know what's coming out of their mouths?
I don't think he really... got what they were trying to get at with Gangs of New York?
No.
It's a good movie. Real good movie. Daniel Day-Lewis, you got a little... Leo. Leo, that's really good.
Good actors.
Yeah, good stuff.
I have a note. Note to the MAGA party. Do not address one of the most complex public policy issues of our time through references to Hollywood film. This... does not a robust federal immigration policy make?
Really?
Not a good look either. I do want to talk about the fact that the Milwaukee Police Association, in what can only be described as tone-deaf, out of touch, and downright racist, coming out and endorsing the Trump-Vance ticket this past week. To me, it conjures up, sirs, have you no shame?
Can I just make a suggestion? Again, I'm the grandson of a cop.
Yes.
But I would say maybe don't endorse anyone.
Yes, I was going to say.
Police union, you don't endorse anyone at all. Just say, we endorse the people that we protect. Thank you. Have a nice day.
Right. This, to me, is what is so wrong-footed and, frankly, kind of flipping a finger to many people in Milwaukee who have legitimate questions about how do we rebuild the relationship of trust that must exist between those in law enforcement and the communities that they are sworn to protect and serve. You don't do that by choosing the most outwardly racist former president, now candidate for president again, who talks about locking up 12 million people and deporting them, which would essentially require the creation of massive concentration camps. Who embraces Nick Fuentes, a white supremacist. You don't do that. Your option isn't endorse Harris Walz or endorse Trump Vance. It's to be quiet about this, shut your yaps, and worry about your actual job, especially because of the message that this sends to so many in our community.
Mm-hmm.
If you were a person here illegally and were the victim of a violent crime, would you feel more or less confident in cooperating with the Milwaukee Police Department after that endorsement? The only answer is I feel less safe, less comfortable as a victim of a crime if I happen to be here illegally. I'm scared to death of a police organization where their fraternal order decides to endorse one of the most racist people we've ever had involved at this level of politics in 50 to 100 years. It just seems so morally reprehensible to me. And there are police officers in my circle of very close friends.
Same.
That I have the utmost respect and love for, that I know how damn hard their job is every day.
I hate it when their friends make their jobs harder. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
But I also want to point out locally, I knew a couple Chicago cops, And Chicago police here, they're all put on 11 to 4s, and they're all none of them are getting overtime either. They're all mandatory shifts this week, and they're all mandatory shifts this week, and they are all not overtime. So the Chicago police around here, which, by the way, their presence is huge.
Yes.
And they absolutely deserve all this. I would give them overtime immediately. But they're entering into this whole taking care of us situation with knowing that they're not getting overtime.
Yeah. It's,
and that's frustrating as heck from their end of view. So
this brings me to sort of the place that I wanted to end today. And that is, I ask everybody to think really hard about the false choice that I think the MAGA party presents to people, which is you either believe what we believe or you're an immoral, terrible human being. You either support Donald Trump or you're not a patriot. You either want to deport 12 million people and construct concentration camps, or you believe in open borders. All of that is garbage. It is untrue. We need people that can have thoughtful, difficult, and challenging discussions about these issues of grave, grave importance. And I say all of this and can still say to the Milwaukee Police Association that it was a moral screw-up to endorse the Trump-Vance ticket. That is not your primary objective.
Totally.
Do better. I cannot wait. I've got the very best guest to close out this opening show of the Maggie Dawn Show here at the DNC in Chicago. None other than Milwaukee Mayor Cavalier Johnson coming up next. You're not going to want to miss it. All the best people we've got here, Brian. Stay tuned, everybody. Civic Media coming to you live from downtown Chicago, the United Center, here with our DNC coverage. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back, Wisconsin. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network, our special live coverage coming to you from downtown Wisconsin, the United Center. And I can think of no better guest to help me close out our first day, my first day of broadcasting here, than my good friend and each one of yours, Mayor Cavalier Johnson. Welcome back, Chevy. Great to have you.
Happy to be on. Sorry about, you know, my travels getting here. Maybe I was supposed to help you open, not close.
I think closing is all the better. You always want to speak last in the lineup. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Mr. Mayor, thanks so much for being here. There is quite the lineup just here for speakers on day one of the DNC. We've got Jamie Harrison, chairman of the DNC. We've got remarks and video introduction by the mayor of Chicago. We've got Peggy Flanagan, the LG of Minnesota. We've got Lauren Underwood, Rich Loges. Of course, we then get into current President Biden. We may hear from Hillary Clinton. I mean, so much happening today. What are you most looking forward to, the convention writ large, but also specifically today on the kickoff day?
Well, my gosh, you just named off a number of outstanding individuals that I can't wait to hear from. I'm really looking forward to hearing from President Biden.
Yes.
I really, really am. I mean, to think about this moment that we're in right now and all of the energy and all the excitement that's happening on the ground for Democrats across Milwaukee, across Wisconsin, across the United States, it all stems from the fact that Joe Biden made a decision, and the ultimate decision that I just can't imagine somebody who has devoted 50 years of their life to public service and has achieved the pinnacle of American political power to be the president of the United States and to make the selfless decision to walk away from that in service to his country.
Yes.
And we get to hear from that man, somebody who we've benefited from over the course of the last number of years as president and even beyond. I'm looking forward to hearing from Joe.
Yes.
I really can't wait to do it. He's been just a phenomenal leader for us and somebody that I really, really look up to.
Yes, I couldn't agree with you more. I personally am, no dollars exchanged, but a little over under on how long the ovation and how long the chanting of "Thank you, Joe" will go. I imagine the roof is going to blow off of this place. I think, again, I couldn't agree with you more, Mr. Mayor, that someone who is, by all accounts, the most powerful single individual on planet Earth,
yes,
saying, "I'm going to pass the torch," that moment is just breathtaking in its fundamental commitment to service and to service to others over self. And what a contrast that draws to Vice President Harris's opponent,
mm-hmm.
Especially considering that here we stand and the candidate, the woman at the top of the ticket, is a Black Asian woman.
Yep.
I remark often, Mr. Mayor, on the show that as a native Milwaukeean, if someone would have told me 15 years ago that there'd be a Black mayor, a Black county executive, a Latino president of the Common Council, an Afro-Latino woman heading up the county board, a Black sheriff, and a Black chief of police, we'd be looking at a Black Asian candidate for president and a former Black lieutenant governor, I would have said to them, "No way, what you talking about?" Mm-hmm. And here we are. The promise, the potential of this moment feels truly palpable. As Milwaukee's first Black elected mayor, what does this mean to you personally?
Oh, I mean, it means so much. It means so much. I mean, you just went through the litany of individuals who represent us at various levels of government that are making an impact in people's lives each and every single day. I mean, you think about Milwaukee. I mean, it's a majority minority city.
Yes.
And in Milwaukee, and this doesn't happen, you know, in every single community, but in Milwaukee, I feel like we're sort of leading the way with having representation that actually reflects the city.
Looks like the city, know? And the county.
And that's important.
Yeah.
It's really, really important. And I count myself lucky to be able to serve at this time amongst this distinguished group of individuals. One that didn't even mention is United States Representative Gwen Moore.
Of course. Oh, my gosh.
You know, who's, you know,
thank you for minding my P's and Q's. The trailblazer,
yes,
Representative Moore,
yes,
of course.
Yes,
and, of course, Senator Baldwin representing,
yes,
the LGBTQ,
yes, yes,
community.
Yes, absolutely.
What
absolutely,
a moment.
Absolutely. And so I count myself lucky. I really do. To be able to serve with all these dynamic, just incredible individuals who are serving our city, our state, our county, and our country.
Yeah. One of the things that I feel so lucky to be doing what I'm doing now, because the thing that I observe in each and every one of those leaders that we've just been talking about is every single one of them, I've been able to sit down. I worked with you back when I was, mm-hmm, at the city, worked with a lot of these people, is two or three fundamental personality characteristics that's common amongst each and every one of you. One is a desire to serve others. The second is an incredible amount of humility. And third is an openness to good ideas that work and a desire to make things work better for everybody in these different jurisdictions that you all represent. And it's truly been a privilege and so exciting for me as a citizen and as a voter, and now somebody that gets to do this cool job, to watch it all happen. When we look at what this next week might bring, what do you think is the most important message for the Harris Walls ticket to communicate to the American voters coming out of the convention?
Well, I think what the most important thing to do for the campaign and for Democrats generally is to showcase the unity in our party. I mean, this, yes, is, you know, an opportunity for Democrats to line up and be counted.
Yes. Right?
And to show our strength leading, you know, down the final stretch into November's election. And when you look at the speakers that you just outlined, just,
yes,
for today,
yes,
right? When you look at those speakers and the speakers that'll be taking the stage over the course of the next several days here at the DNC, and you contrast that with the Republican National Convention, I mean, there are some really, you know, gleaming differences between the two. I mean, here you've got the sitting president of the United States, Joe Biden. You got Barack Obama. You got others. Yes. And you couldn't even get the former president, elected Republican president, to come to the RNC. Up. So it's different.
We got to leave it there. One's a circus. One's a bunch of people coming together for the betterment of Americans. Thanks so much, Mr. Mayor Cavalier Johnson, for joining me. It's always good to see you, sir.
Happy to join you.
Have a great RNC. Hope you can pop by again on the show. I'm Maggie Dawn. You've been listening to the Civic Media Radio Network special coverage coming to you live from downtown Chicago at the United Center. Stay put, everybody. The Devil's Advocates Radio is up next. You won't want to miss it. See you all tomorrow.